Merry Drapmas, everybody!
Merry Drapmas!
Merry Drapmas, Ms. Rothschild!
Oh, Billy, Merry Drapmas! Why'd you come in and have a Drapmas cookie?
Do you need me to polish any of your porcelain, Mrs. Rothschild?
Well, I've been quarantined for 3 weeks, so I've polished everything once, twice, and three times over again, but thank you for offering!
You know that was a euphemism for sex, Miss Rothschild.
Oh, Billy, always on your mind, isn't it?
Dirty.
We enter week number two of our Drapmas season, and we have more Drapmas items to cover as we get ready. 17 days away from the National Football League draft, and we've already opened up the Drapmas catalog, and we've sorted out the wide receivers available. We've all chosen our personal favorite going forward. But our second portion of our Drapmas schedule has to deal with the past, the history of the Seahawks and their drafting, a novel written by Charles Dickens, A Drapmas Carol. Mm. And we present to you the fourth chapter of our novel today. Of course, that's spelled C-A-R-R-O-L-L. Yes. And it stars Pete Cratchit, bubblegum chewing, nurse shoe wearing, head coach of our football franchise, trying to get us back to a Super Bowl title. It also stars fun old Schneiderwig, always the life of the party, always keeping things interesting, and always a jovial approach at all times to all Seahawk transactions, including all Seahawk draft picks. And, of course, the star of all stars, even though his role in the draft will be insignificant compared to the other two, but Tiny Russ, we keep his health and well-being in our hearts and minds at all given times to make sure that he will play football again and in the best situation possible. We all think of Tiny Russ at this time of the year. Have I brought a tear to your eye yet, Bucky? Have I brought a tear to your eye?
I don't know for sure. I'm not to sweaty eyes yet. I mean, you are daily getting me more and more kind of involved in this whole Drapmas thing, and rightfully so. We're only a few weeks away, a couple weeks away now, and so, it's you're getting there. I'm not getting to where I'm getting teary-eyed yet, though, no.
Okay. All right. Fine. Be that way. All right. So, A Drapmas Carol kind of looks at the ghosts of Drapmas past that either are back to haunt us as, you know, people that as we try to get the Seahawks to back to the championship level. Do they haunt us or do they point us in a new and better direction because of the lessons that we've learned? And today we take a look at the defensive tackle position and the many ghosts of Drapmas past, the picks that they have made. And as we go to the Drapmas past, I will create a scenario in which the response to the scenario is bah humbug or we got to deal Seattle. So I don't think you can go any further into the past without bringing up the name Malik McDowell, a terrifying figure who is there to haunt us forever. The 6'6", 300-pound defensive tackle that was supposed to give Pete and John the three-technique pass-rushing defensive tackle they had always coveted. They ignored all the warning signs with Malik McDowell and decided to draft him anyway. And he not only never played a game for this team, he never even practiced, despite the fact that in 2017 they spent a second-round selection, 35th pick overall, on Malik McDowell. And so I guess my question is, as we get ready for the NFL draft, gentlemen, the scratch that that itch that they weren't able to scratch with Malik McDowell, do you think that they should stay on their persistent bandwagon to find this type of a player? Would you bah humbug the notion of potentially drafting high a three-technique defensive tackle to try and finally satisfy that want for a Malik McDowell-type player? Or is it time to move on from that notion, once bitten, twice shy sort of scenario with Malik McDowell? Slickhawk, where do you want to go with this?
Well, for me...
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal.
Look, that's that's one of the more disruptive, has potential to be one of the most disruptive positions on the field. If you can get that three technique that can get in the backfield, be a monster against the run, and rush the passer, I mean, that's what Aaron Donald is, right? And that look what he is. So looking for that type of guy, I mean, yeah. I think that that's something they should always be looking to get, because that's somebody that can change the direction of your defense and your organization.
Bucky?
Bah, humbug on that.
Ah, humbug.
The reason I'm thinking bah, humbug is not because you don't want one. Yeah, I mean, if an Aaron Donald, if you can sniper one of those guys that changes what the pocket looks like when it right in a quarterback's face, obviously that is something that you really could fall in love with. It just is, to me, if the question somewhat is, would I use some draft capital to go get a guy like that? Because it's what I've wanted for a while, and even though I got burned with it a time or two, I think you got Jaron Reed back. I think that not this year quite so much, but Puna Ford was still effective to some degree. You still have, Nas Jones, right? He still kind of plays that defensive tackle position. I'm going to still add somebody there. But, I mean, I wouldn't take anybody probably in the first few rounds necessarily trying to find that guy that we missed out on with Malik McDowell. That's not the priority to me. The priority is guys on the edge and coming off the outside. And so I would say bah humbug on that one.
Bah humbug on that. The only thing, I bring it up today for a number of reasons, but I would just reference a couple of our conversations that we've had today. All right, so I don't see anybody as an edge rusher that you would even consider moving up for to take, and I don't expect John to move up for anybody and take them, but there might be a couple defensive tackles like the Derrick Brown guy out of Auburn or Javon Kinlaw out of South Carolina. Those are two tremendous upside prospects that could be pass rushers. And so, you know, maybe if you were looking to move up slightly, it's not for a defensive end. It's not reaching for a defensive end. It's taking a guy at a defensive tackle position that Malik McDowell void in the Seahawks' life. Would you at all entertain it that way, Bucky, that maybe you move up two or three slots if one of those two guys starts falling your direction and you could try to hammer away at your pass rush issue from the inside?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would entertain the idea. I think this is where, you know, the axes that you talk about and where they kind of collide as far as what we need and then what we want and where that player kind of pans out. You know, we've talked to multiple draft experts and they say that the depth as far as edge rushers isn't all that great. I mean, you got Chase Young is the one clear-cut superstar stud that's going to come in and make an impact right off the bat, and then everybody else has issues. Well, how many issues? Is it still plug and play? Is Gross Matos a guy you can plug in there? And yeah, he's going to make some mistakes and he's got some learning to do, but he still is a guy that's going to be productive to some extent. He's a legit first round guy, potentially, maybe second round, whatever. I have a feeling that, yes, if all of a sudden you start getting later on in the draft and you feel like we had this guy rated, you know, 50 picks higher than this edge guy, then yeah, you switch gears at that point and you say, you know what, pass rush, I don't care where it comes from. Being disruptive, getting in the quarterback's face, I don't care where it comes from. And if you could pair Jaron Reed with somebody that you feel is also going to penetrate and get back into that quarterback's lap, then yeah, it's definitely something that I would entertain.
Oh, Fezziwig grew. I mean, he woke up from that nightmare, that ghost of Christmas past, Slickhawk, and yeah. He was just drenched in sweat. I mean, when Malik McDowell came out there in all his chains and everything.
My God.
Oh, Schneiderwig couldn't go back to sleep that night.
Would you be able to? I mean, my goodness. The perpetual humbug.
Humbug.
That you have to live with for the rest of your life because of that Malik McDowell pick. I mean, that's something. Look, those chains will be on him for the rest of his life. It doesn't matter what ghosts visit him in the present and the future. That's still going to be weighing him down. Now, you can try and move on from that. And maybe that is in the interior. You know, just like Bucky said, when Jaron Reed had 10.5 sacks 2 years ago, did you care that they came from the interior instead of the on the edge? No. In fact, it was better because, look, we think that the Seahawks can probably address some of these issues out on the edge still in free agency, right? Everson Griffin's out there. Jadeveon Clowney's out there. You can go and bring in guys just by paying them. that can take care of the edge, at least for this year, and then maybe kick that problem down the road as far as the draft goes, and you have better first-round talent on the edge. But if you're telling me that they can either at 27 or maybe move up a little bit and get an impact player that can bring you pass rush it from the interior, and that's going to be better than what you get in the draft out of the edge, I'm down with that, too.
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal.
All right, let's go to the ghost of Draftmas present. In 2016, Pete and John decided to go with Jaron Reed with the 49th pick overall, second round in the 2016 NFL draft. They were visited by the ghost of Draftmas present this offseason in free agency, and they decided they liked what they saw, and they re-signed him. So I'm going to say that they re-signed the Jaron Reed of 2018 and not 2019. What say you to my prediction? Do you think I'm right or wrong? Are you going to bah humbug me, or are you going to tell me that we've got a deal, Slick Hawk?
Well, for me...
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal.
And maybe that's optimistic of me, but just there were a lot of factors that went in last year. You know, you had a 6-game suspension that Jaron Reed started his season with. Then he goes to a defensive line that was largely changed, and so he needed time to acclimate to that. He just never really gotten a rhythm, gotten his flow. So hopefully, you know, starting off this season on the defensive line, week one with everybody, he'll be able to work back into that 10.5 sack Jaron Reed that he was 2 years ago, and I think he'll be able to.
All right, I'm being optimistic, Bucky. Do you bah humbug me? Do you think we got a deal?
Well, I want to be optimistic. I think this guy's a legitimate NFL stud. I think that he's good. I think he's really good. I don't think you wasted a pick or took him too early by taking him in the second round. But I mean, if I have to think, is he the guy last year? I would say no, but I think he's better than that. But do I think he's a 10.5 sack guy? No, I don't think he's.
Somewhere in between. Is he more like that guy or more like the one we saw last year?
I'm saying he's
more like the guy from 2 years ago.
I say he's more like the guy from 2 years ago as well. So I'm going to say, yep,
we got a deal.
There
yep,
we go.
I think he's more like it. Yep.
All right. All right. Finally, the ghost of Draftmas future. It's an unknown. And after Jaron Reed was re-signed, I'm not sure it's as high a priority. And yet I do expect that they will draft a defensive tackle at some point between April 23rd and April 25th. Do we have a deal on that, or do you bah humbug the idea of adding more defensive tackle presence through the draft for the Seahawks this upcoming year, Slick?
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal.
I want them to go defensive end, defensive tackle with their first two picks. I mean, that's it. That's all I want them to do, first two picks. D end, D tackle. Whichever order it's in.
I want a deal, too.
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal.
I do not feel, however, quite as strongly as Slick. I want D-end, obviously, to be their first pick. I think that's the thing they need the most, but I don't know for sure if D-tackle is the next thing they need to go out there and reach for. If somebody falls in their lap that they have graded high, I am not going to sit there and say, oh, that's a bad pick, because D-line is where they need to upgrade. But to me, if it happens later on in the draft, I still think that would be fine. Get another body in there, somebody else that you want to give a shot at, possibly getting in that quarterback's face.
I think they absolutely are going to add a defensive tackle. I don't know if it's any more the priority that it once was. You still have Nas Jones. You still have Puna Ford. I think they're still interested in a couple of these. You know, I'm not giving up on DeMarcus Christmas, my favorite Seahawks draft pick of all time, for obvious reasons. So they are definitely going to add some depth here. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I'm not sure anymore if it will happen in day one or day two. But at some point, certainly they are going to add some defensive tackle help. All right. So Pete survives another night of being visited by ghosts, those from the past, those from the present, and those from the future. And so we'll have another chapter of A Draftmas Carol tomorrow night. And thank you, Little Russ, for all of your positive words. You get us through the hard times. All right, coming up next on the program, no baseball season, but it isn't going to stop us. We will continue with our simulated Mariners season on Sports Radio 950. From now, $1,000 could be yours. It's our Seaview Buick GMC cash giveaway. Be listening for the keyword at 9:40 this morning and text that in, and you have a shot at $1,000. Hopefully, we can help you through some of these tough times that I know a lot of you are going through at this time. Also, one last thing closes us out today. News from the golf world we'll share with you. And one last thing at 9:45. This morning, but Slick Hawk, we've got work to do. We put together this Slicktronic 4000. Yes. Some are calling it the greatest invention of the 21st century. And what it is, it allows us to simulate the Seattle Mariners season we are being deprived of at this given moment, and looks like we're going to be deprived of for many days to come. And so we would not be deterred. We are going to have our Mariner baseball, whether it's real or fake. And so we sit down every evening with Slick Hawk as he runs things through the Slicktronic 4000 to spit out some results. So when last we spoke, where were we at with the Mariners and their season?
The Mariners are 3-5. On Thursday, they played their first road game at Kansas City. But I believe this was the home opening series for the Royals. So they did that thing where they leave that Friday open in case they have to shift because of weather or whatever. So there was actually no game on Friday, but a game to be played on Saturday and Sunday for your 3-5 Mariners.
3-5 Mariners. Yep. Here we go then.
You're talking Justice Sheffield against Jake Junis. And
he's terrible.
Which one?
We should smoke him.
Sheffield, so bottom of the first inning, so that's for the Royals. Mondesi, he singles. Steele second and third. So again, testing the arm of Tom Murphy. He's being stolen on left and right this season.
Yeah, try a pitch-out service. Come on, now.
Yeah, they actually have been attempting a few of those in this series. I'll get to that later. And but Dozier with an RBI single makes it 1-0. In the second inning, Mariners answer right back. How about a J.P. Crawford single? How about a Spudge walk? First day playing after his
good benching. Good eye, Spudge.
Works the walk. Braden Bishop single loads the bases. And then, and then you get a Malik Smith walk. That walks in the tying run, 1-1.
What did I tell you about Junis? I mean, the scouting report was dead on. It was just two words. He sucks.
Four straight balls, by the way, on that walk. Then Kyle Lewis flies out, and Shed Long strikes out. So you've got, two on, two out, and then but Evan White comes to the plate. He's been one of your more consistent hitters this season.
Apple of my eye.
And an RBI single gives the Mariners a 2-1 lead.
That. Look at that.
So these Mariners, they bounce back. They're resilient.
Yeah, I mean, this kid, you're going to love him so much. He's one of those types that probably, right before the game, stopped an armed robbery, probably donated a kidney to charity. This is the kind of kid. And then he goes through and he comes through in his first at bat of the game with a clutch RBI single. I mean, you're really going to like everything about this young man.
Nothing surprises me anymore from Evan White.
No, and it won't.
As resilient as the Mariners are, the Royals are just as resilient because the bottom half of the inning, another Mondesi single scores Franco and Phillips. And then
pitch out.
And then Mondesi sees he steals second.
Oh, my again. Gosh. What are we going to do, Scott?
Advances on a on a Gordon single and then scores on
service.
A sack fly.
You better check your wallet. Mondesi might have stolen that, too.
It's 4-2 Royals. Which takes us all the way to the top of the fifth inning. Still 4-2 Royals. Shed Long, one out double. And then an Evan White double scores Long. And then Seager comes up. We all know that he's been the hot hitter early on this season. Well, he hammers the ball to the right field wall. He hit it so hard, the ball was actually caught at the wall, but the right fielder smashed into the wall and fell down. So the tagging Evan White scores from second to tie up the game 4-4.
What did I tell you about him? What did I tell you? He just does things. I mean, you're not supposed to score from second on a sacrifice fly. Evan White can do it because he's paying attention. He's heroic and brave.
Yep. I feel that 100%.
Yeah.
He's brave.
So Eric Swanson comes on to pitch the sixth inning, bottom of the sixth. Leads off with a triple from Franco, and then another triple from O'Hearn.
Obviously back-to-back triples?
Obviously scores Franco, yes. And then Phillips. That's rare. Phillips with an RBI ground out. So that makes the score 6-4 Kansas City.
You realize how excited that simulated Goldsmith is about the rarity of back-to-back triples?
Well, I haven't had a cycle to talk about in a while.
Yeah, I'm realizing how blown his simulated mind is at this point, talking to simulated Blowers right now about back-to-back triples.
Right.
Like, he's more excited about that than his senior prom. Which was also, by the way, simulated.
Ooh, yeah. How about that? Mariners, top of the seventh, down 6-4. Shed Long leads off the inning with a double. Kyle Seager comes through again with an RBI single. Clutch Seager, 6-5 now the Kansas City lead. But in the bottom half of the inning, Altavilla comes in. Whit Merrifield immediately hits a double. Advances on a long fly out, and then Salvador Perez brings him home with an RBI single to make it 7-5. That score carries all the way into the ninth inning. Barlow comes on. He gets White to pop out. He gets Seager to strike out looking. Tom Murphy to strike out swinging. And your final score, 7-5 Kansas City. And the Mariners fall to 3-6.
What is going on? I mean, what is has gotten derailed?
Not the kind of streaking I like.
No, not really good. Although Shed Long, and it's his return from his injury, right? He was 3-5, so that's good news. Evan White 2-5, Seager 2-4, J.P. Crawford was 3-4. Spud went 0-2, but did draw a couple of walks. Kyle Lewis once again 0-4. He's now betting 0-3-2 on the season.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man, Kyle.
And then more bad news from Justice Sheffield. Only goes the three innings, gives up 4 earned runs, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts.
By the way, service, Adalberto Mondesi is sitting by her wife in the stands. Be careful, he might steal her, too.
It's interesting because the Sunday game...
Puts up some defenses here. You know,
the Sunday game, a day game. Every time Mondesi is up, they try pitch outs. They throw over to first base for a pickoff attempt. None of those end up working though here on game 10, which is Justin Dunn against Duffy. But the game did something rather interesting. The game actually took matters into its own hands and made some substitutions all on its own. Kyle Lewis didn't play yesterday. Spudge didn't play yesterday. Tim Lopes got in the game, and Austin Nola got in the game as well. So did Dylan Moore. So interesting. And they had Malik
Smith.
Well,
if it is breakthrough technology, yeah, then you know it has to be able to read that guys need days off, or the guys are tired, mm-hmm, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
If somebody's hitting 0-32, yeah. I would think that the Slicktronic 3000 would have been able to sense that he needed a day off.
Probably.
The 4000 has it in the bag, right?
Without question. So, as part of those changes, Malik Smith yesterday was your leadoff hitter. And Malik Smith led the game off with a home run!
What? Oh, wow.
Yes.
Look at that.
Yes, immediate results.
Butt chewing, maybe service through a chair, maybe threw some bats into the shower, maybe did a lollygagger speech. You know, we got to get this team on track. 3-6 isn't going to get a cut.
Exactly, the lollygaggers. You guys.
Bunch of lollygaggers.
You lollygag the ball around the empty. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. Do you know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygaggers.
I guess you guys are under the impression that just because your boss and general manager said wins and losses don't matter, that wins and losses don't matter.
Well, I hope not, because the losses are starting to pile up. So Malik does lead off with a home run, but in the bottom half of the inning, a Solera RBI double ties it up. The team's trade manufactured runs in the second. And then the top, that brings up us to the top of the fourth with a 2-2, sorry, a 1-1 score. Sorry, 2-2 score. Then Tom Murphy walks, Evan White draws a walk, and Nola comes up, delivers a 2-run double, Mariners up 4-2.
Oh, look at that.
Then he moves
Evan
down.
Evan White made it happen.
Yeah.
Good eye.
Then he moves down to third base on an error. Shed long grounds into a double play. Doesn't get credit with an RBI, but he does score Nola, and the Mariners are up 5-2. Finally something to get excited about for the M's.
We are routing your asses, Kansas City.
Yeah, trying to avoid the sweep. But bottom of the fourth, they do get one back on a Mondesi RBI single, so that makes it 5-3.
Cheaters.
And then in the bottom of the fifth, and this is with Dunn still pitching, they tie it up with a string of doubles.
What?
So, yeah.
What do you mean they tied it up?
Well, they tied it up at 5-5. Justin Dunn gave up 5 runs. 4 of them earned in the game, in the over 5 innings, by the way. So that makes it 5-5, which the score stayed until all the way into the 9th inning. The Mariners weren't able to do anything in the top half. Swanson came on. To pitched a 1-2-3 in the inning in the 8th, by the way. They left him in for the 9th. He promptly walks Soler. Starling runs for Soler. Dozier with a single, and then Salvador Perez hits the game-winning RBI single. Game over. 6-5 Kansas City. Mariners fall to 3-7. They've now lost 5 games in a row.
What is happening here?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Man, here I was. I mean, it's one thing to prepare yourself for a 100-loss real season, but then once you get caught up into the simulation, you think to yourself that maybe things will turn out differently.
Right.
I mean, this is really painful to suffer a 100-loss simulated season.
And they had some good offense in this game. I mean, in the whole series, really, they were kind of hitting well. One game they had 12 hits. This game they
Facing Jake Junis, for goodness sake.
Yeah, well, this game they had 8 hits and scored 5 runs. It wasn't enough. Malik Smith, 2-for-5 in that leadoff role. Malik Smith is hitting .324 to start the season, so that's pretty good. Evan White's hitting .297. Nola, when he gets his opportunities, is taking advantage of him. He's hitting .345. And Shed Long is now hitting .240 on the year.
Yeah.
Seager, .389.
All right. Well, Seager's still doing his thing. Yeah. All right, trade value. All right, there you go. The simulated season has hit a rut at this point here on Chuck and the Buck. Chuck and Buck in the Morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. You know, there is a valued point to bring up here, and here we are. We're sitting here and kind of waiting for this rebuilding year. I will just ask you, Bucky. I mean, as young players who are getting ready to take that next step in their careers and getting ready for playing time, Major League Baseball playing time, and Jerry wanted to use this year to develop players. This thing keeps stretching out a little further. How much is this slowing development to just be sitting there and not playing any baseball right now?
Well, it's got to be slowing it down, significantly. Bottom line, I've talked about it a bunch on the show before about, when you take, at the end of a season, you'll take usually a month or so, maybe 2 months off, where you just don't play ball, you're not throwing, you're not hitting, you're not doing anything, and then you know, Christmas time comes around and you start ramping it back up, getting ready for spring training. And this year, it's like they kind of did that as business as normal and then went to spring training. So, I think everything was all the same. Now, all of a sudden, to not get that, and at this point, no matter what you're doing at home, being quarantined and not being able to, you know, go face live pitching, there's no batting cages that are open. I'm sure there's some guys that have something at home where they're getting some work in, but it's not the same. I mean, it's you at this point, they've had enough time off that they've kind of reverted back to what they were before they went to spring training. It's almost like that didn't even happen as far as their progress goes. So if and when this season ever does start, it definitely is going to stun it a little bit. You just got to figure it's one of those things that I don't know what the number is exactly, but now when I was playing, they used to think you're going to need about 2,500 ABs in the minor leagues before you would be ready for the big leagues. And that's not a set number for every single person. And I think that numbers came down a little bit from when I used to play. But there still is a bunch of ABs. 2,500 ABs, that's roughly about five seasons that they're saying is the average it's going to take you, because it's relative. If you would have told me when I was in high school, hey, go and face some guy that's throwing 97 miles an hour, I would have had zero chance. And then that was the same guy that, you know, 5 years later, I could turn around 100 mile an hour fastball, no problem. So it's all relative, what you're used to. And so to me, if you end up taking off close to a year, you know, before in between having live ABs, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it that you went backwards. You will have lost some of the stuff that you had gained. So, you know, I know that all these guys, the youngsters and the old guys alike, are out there and they're doing what they can to kind of stay prepared for the season if and when it does turn on again. But yeah, the youngsters, I think, are the ones that are probably taking it a little bit harder. It's a little bit harder for them on their progression to the show and becoming the guys that they're going to be, simply because you just need that more often than not. Those couple months at the end of the season are necessary to kind of regroup and kind of, you know, get your energy back and then, you know, get out of that grind, that the mentality that the grind of baseball puts on you between the years. But now we're at the point where all of a sudden it's you just kind of have to have the mindset of I'm going to control what I can control and not let anything else really deter me or affect me. But that's easier said than done. If you're missing ABs now, I mean, you figure a lot of these guys haven't had ABs since the beginning of September last year. And so we're looking at a long time. It's been a long time since they've been doing stuff that is perfecting their craft. And so it's not good. I don't think it's good. That being said, everybody's in the same boat. So it's not like you're the only team that's kind of going through the same thing.
Yeah, one extreme, you got a team that like built themselves for a championship run like the Dodgers. And sitting there not, you know, knowing if they're actually going to get to play, not knowing if Mookie Betts is even going to play a single pitch in a Dodger uniform. And then on the flip side of it, there's got the world of Jerry, where he's in a rebuild, and you wouldn't think to a guy that's in an admitted rebuild that year is, you know, as valuable. But it is hugely valuable for the development that his young players need, and yet they're not going to potentially get that. I mean, Julio Rodriguez, I think, was going to play this year at some point in a Mariner uniform late in the season. Kelenic was going to play this year in a Mariner uniform. Gilbert was going to play this year in a Mariner uniform at some point during the year. At least I was led to believe that. And now I don't know if you play any of these young guys. If it ends up being a shortened season, Bucky, you know, you might not get eyeballs at the major league level on any of these prize prospects that are coming up.
Yeah, it depends, man. It depends how much of the season they get in, if they get any of it at all. I mean, if they come back and they got, you know, 60-plus games, I wouldn't be surprised if they still find a way to get some of these guys a little cup of coffee, just get a little taste of what it's like. But if we're any less than that, if it's just some crazy abbreviated schedule, then I think that they kind of have to figure out the guys that they were going to open the season with on their roster. They have to figure out if those guys are going to be part of the future potentially, and so they're going to give them their trial run. And if it's only a 50-game season, that's you're going to need all of that time to figure out if the Braden Bishops and, you know, if Malik Smith is in your future plans. You're going to need to find out about those guys, Vogie and all of it. So, it's up in the air at this point. It just kind of depends on how much time they get in.
Yeah, I think you're dead on there. I think if a shortened season means that you're evaluating if there's any at all interest in keeping Malik Smith long-term, Braden Bishop, Kyle Lewis, guys like that, that you already had scheduled to play a lot and evaluate them to see if they're going to be a part of this thing going forward. And then the guys you know are going to be a part of this thing going forward, maybe you sit on for 2020. But we'll see. Who knows if we're going to play any baseball at all at this point. We got $1,000 to give away. Text the keyword HOPE, H-O-P-E, to 200-200. That's HOPE, H-O-P-E, to 200-200 for a chance at $1,000. Once you get in and you get a confirmation text, standard data and text message rates do apply, by the way. Then you'll be in a drawing for $1,000, an opportunity for you to possibly pay some bills during these very rough times, and we hope that it comes of use to somebody out there. And if you're set, play for somebody else, for goodness sake. It'd be a nice little gift to drop off at somebody's house, $1,000 in cash, thanks to Seaview Buick GMC. Coming up, we've got one last thing here on a Monday morning, some golf news to share with you on Sports Radio 950. Final segment here on this Monday edition of Chuck and Buck in the Morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. We always dedicate that to one last thing, whatever anybody else on their mind, whether it's something that hasn't come up in the show today or something that you want to expand upon. And I feel like we sort of have some breaking news that we've been touched upon as a show to this point, but they have decided to reschedule all the majors except for the British Open at this point. Bucky, what do you think of a Masters in November?
That could be a little chilly. Could be a little chilly. Then again, down there in Georgia, it does stay warmer than it does up north. So I wouldn't mind it. I want them to get those more majors in. That's what I've been kind of thinking is I see all these things getting canceled and pushed back and whatnot. Hopefully they, instead of just preemptively just saying, "Up, we're done, we're not doing it," hopefully they just kind of hold their horses a little bit and see if this thing, if we get through this thing, and when the time comes and when it's safe for the golfers to get back out there first, and then if and when the time comes that it's okay to have the galleries there. I just want them to play those Masters. It would suck if we don't get those four majors in. That would really kind of suck. But we'll see what happens. I wouldn't mind seeing them. I don't care when it comes. I don't care really how it works out as far as the timeline goes. I just would like if they could try to get those in. I mean, it basically is a weekend, right? I mean, they could essentially do this whole thing in a month if they wanted to just bang them out one after another.
Has anybody seen, of the three of us, Augusta in the fall? I mean, how is it beautiful? It might be beautiful. It
might be. I don't know. I've never seen that.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I haven't seen it.
We always see
it.
The azaleas sure in not full bloom. But what about the yeah azaleas with orange and, you know, orange leaves?
Yeah. I'm sure that it's still beautiful. I mean, that track is, I'm sure it's beautiful year round. They, as much time and effort as they put into making that thing nice. But I wouldn't be surprised if some of the flowers aren't quite as beautiful as they are in April. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's all right, though. I mean, for one time, right, one time only, it might be kind of fun, you know, to get, sure, you know, Thanksgiving's in next weekend and this weekend, the Masters.
Oh.
What's wrong with that?
Sign me up. I want to watch the Masters for sure.
How about that? Did they reschedule the rest of the majors as well?
Yeah, they did. So the U.S. Open is going to take place, I believe, in September, then August for the PGA.
Okay. All right. And then go back right to the normal schedule again next year, hopefully. So basically,
fingers
you
crossed,
only have,
yeah,
what, 5 months separating Masters. How about that?
That would, ooh, be weird.
That'd be all right with me.
Look, and
I'd be fine if they played it three times a year.
And depending on the way, you know, all this stuff goes and everything, we might be really, really, really grateful to be able to have a Masters going on in November. So, yeah.
There you go.
For sure.
All right. What do you got for one last thing, Bucky?
This is totally off the wall. I don't know. Did you guys end up watching The Tiger King?
No.
No.
You didn't? You haven't logged on? No. Don't know me. I mean, it's about everybody else in the world has watched it. It's crazy. It's about 7 hours that you can't get back. But it kind of is like a, you know, like a train wreck to where you have a hard time turning away from it. You kind of get sucked into it like, what in the world am I watching? Well, Justin Turner from the Dodgers ended up, I guess, essentially kind of throwing out there on social media that he was a fan of the show a couple days ago, and the new owner, not the Joe Exotic that started it, but the guy he ended up being partners with at one point during the whole thing, and I'm not going to spoil how the whole thing ends up when it comes to him, but he ended up coming out in a response on Twitter basically to Justin Turner saying they're going to have one more episode coming out, that they're coming out and filming here in, like he says they're going to film tomorrow. That was a couple days ago, so I think they filmed yesterday and they're going to have one more episode. My wife told me about it yesterday. She goes, are you excited? And I said, I don't know for sure if I'm excited, but I'm sure I'm going to watch. It's just that's what the times we're in right now. I got sucked into it, and so now all of a sudden I'm going to want to see what the heck it is they're going to do as a little follow-up of some sort.
My brother called me. He was like, are you watching it? And I'm like, no, I'm not watching it. He goes, why are you not watching this? You have to watch this. Everybody is watching this. He goes, the 100 most jaw-dropping moments in television history have all occurred on this show. And my response to it was, I don't doubt for a second that I would get sucked into watching it, but I'm not sure I want to. Mm. You know, I'm like, I don't know if I want to know about this world and that it exists and that this is real. So I'm still resisting. I'm resisting the temptation to watch, even though we're all on quarantine and I've probably watched so much Cheers that I'm about to puke. But I don't know. I don't know if I can bring myself to do it.
Huh. Well, I'd like to say you're missing out, but I don't know for sure if that's the right way to put it.
All right, Slick, you got anything quickly?
Just that, look, I'm one for reliving things, obviously. I think you know that about me by now. So no matter what it was, whether it was pain or, you know, pure elation, your last football season in terms of fantasy, NFL Red Zone is re-airing starting today their week-by-week episodes. So, like, right now, all morning, week one's NFL Red Zone has been on, and so I'm just kind of rehashing the feelings I got watching all those players play. So if you are a big fantasy player, you might want to, or just missing NFL football, just go to Red Zone and they're airing all the weeks.
If you picked a year, if you picked a year from the past,
yeah.
Give me a year. Just any year you
2006.
Want. 2006. Okay. 2006. It's a little too recent, but actually, let me give you a year. Okay. Let's say it's 1986.
All right, I was two.
1986. Yeah. And then a guy view all the preseason rosters for all the NFL teams. Mm-hmm. And maybe you remembered some of the 1986 season. Maybe you didn't. You'll certainly recognize some of the names, but you may not have known who flourished. Could you then have a fantasy draft and then go back and watch the 86 season and enjoy that?
I would enjoy it. If we could find the footage, sure. I would be all in on that.
Absolutely. Well, even if you couldn't find the file, even if you could only find one or two games, yeah. And then you just looked at the stats
and followed along,
you got the stats.
Hey,
yeah,
let's do it.
I didn't have to twist his arm, did I, Bucky?
Come on,
no.
What are we waiting for?
Yeah, I know.
No looking ahead, no cheating.
Before he said it.
Come on.
The problem is, how are you going to keep 10 people from looking ahead and cheating at future box scores?
I mean, that's the only problem. You get 10 that. People you really trust.
I have one right now on this show. So, all right, coming up next, we got Slick, we got Puckett. Don't forget, 10:45, your next matchup in the You Can Only Have One Bracket Challenge. So keep it here at Sports Radio 950 KJR.